Can I have everybody's attention? The Tina that will be joining you for today's meeting will be the absolute bitch version. I'm just putting it out there.
Are they from Jersey?
That's not funny. I don't need that shit before we start. Really.
Tina, though.
Oh my God. Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes sales sexy again. I'm Rachel Pitts, mom, wifey, and realtor with BRG, turned mortgage loan officer with U.S. Mortgage.
And I'm Gina Tremarco, founder and sales trainer at Pivot 10 Results and Carolina Improv. How's it going, Rach?
Loving this episode that our Warner's about to hear with Tina. She is amazing. I love power women like her.
Oh, she is a Jersey girl. She is super awesome, super high energy. Gosh, we could have gone on forever and ever with her. Probably we'll have her back in some way, shape, or form. But Tina Clements, let's hear a little bit about her. She is a high energy, hands-on, successful leader. Before being asked to launch the BMW Group joint venture called the Retail Performance Company, LLC, also known as RPC, in 2013. She worked for 10-plus years within BMW North America and has been in the learning and development industry since 1996. Prior to BMW, Tina led initiatives and grew talent within organizations such as HBO, Volkswagen, BMW Mini, IBM, WVP Radio Cable Systems, and boutique firms such as Automatic Education. I don't know why I said that in a German accent. She's held, maybe because she does German accents in the show. She does all kinds of accents. She should be a performer. She held leadership positions such as vice president, operations manager, and training manager throughout her career and excels at moving businesses forward and motivating and growing talent. As she is always challenging herself to improve and grow, she has earned her CPC and ELI MP accreditations, among others like DISC, MPTI, and I don't even know what that one is, Langevin. She is the author of The Art of Facilitation and believes success is directly related to the engagement of people. We had a long talk about that. She says, when leaders focus on elevating an environment of employee engagement, success will always come.
I love that she used the word elevate a lot of times.
She did.
And to elevate others within our organization and, you know, outside of your organization and your friends around you, to elevate other women. That's kind of part of what we're all about. And it was one of the great things about this conversation with Tina. She dropped some real simple truth bombs. And she mentions, oh, I hope that, I know I'm dropping these little concise, simple things, but the simple stuff, if we could just keep it darn simple, then I bet life would be easier for all of us. But we like to complicate shit, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We do. I don't know why, but we do. But yeah, she had some really great stuff. We talked a lot about vulnerability, how to be good leaders, how to show up as women. So let's get started with this episode with Tina. Tina, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About. We are so excited to have you today.
We are excited to be here. I don't know why I spoke about myself as if I was like two or three people.
But, who else is there?
And then, oh, that's just in my head, which is wow. Let's just launch into who I am right off the bat right there. Hi, who's going to show up for today's show? Wow.
Sometimes I feel like that, though. As women, you know, every once in a while you wake up and you're a different version. Like, oh, this is the bitchy version today is here. This is the let me fight the bitch back. Or this is the, oh, man, this is like the happy me, jamming in the car me.
I so, think that, though,
I wonder as, if guys as, are like that.
As smart, strong women, to be able to stop and say, can I have everybody's attention? The Tina that will be joining you for today's meeting will be the absolute bitch version. I'm just putting it out there. I had a pretty crappy day on the way in. So just welcome her. All right, let's continue. Which has happened, you know, just
so, guys. So that So now I need to ask, which Tina is joining us on the podcast today?
The one that wishes she had a fancy microphone as opposed to this, you know, 2016 little cord thing that's dangling from my ears. I'm feeling lax.
And hey, don't move that cord thing too much because it creates noise. So, you know, sit still. I know that's hard in Jersey, but
it's you actually kidding. Sound fantastic with it. So just go with it.
Thank you.
You know, don't be intimidated by the size of our microphones because size is not everything, Tina.
Wow, that's a different show. Yes, it is. I'm happy to be a participant on that show as well. I'm a little uncomfortable also because Gina just said, don't move so much. And that's half my personality. So
I'm just teasing you. I think you should move around. You should move around. It's good. It's good. It's good. All right. We should probably get into the meat of this. I forget which Tina is at the show, but we're going to take you
we'll figure
as
it out
you
as
are.
Well. Yeah.
The awesome one.
We'll figure it out. I talked to you maybe a month or so ago. Jacqueline introduced us. Jacqueline's been on our show and we got on a call together and it's like, oh, you're my next new bestie. Jacqueline's my bestie. You're my bestie. And Rachel's got to make sure that she stays top dog of the besties. Yeah. She's like, what are all these besties you're putting in the tribe? Everyone's a bestie, but you are super cool and dynamic and you've done some really cool things in your career and in your company. And what I'd like to do is jump right into kind of launch us in. You have a keynote that you give called Yes, You Do Have a Choice. And I really like reading about it and the blame game and things like that and blocks. Can we talk about that?
Absolutely. Love to. It fell out of me. I will tell you that keynote, it wasn't purposeful. It wasn't, I'm going to sit down with a pen and script out this keynote. It just came from the experience of how we launched our company, the retail performance company in 2013. And quite frankly, how tremendously I failed whilst launching that company. It was just gorgeous. I mean, as failures go and mistakes are made, there were quite a few. And I know there's no such thing as a mistake, only discoveries. And as a result of that, that's really how the keynote came to be. And it's been such an honor to share it because especially women, when I facilitate that message, they run to me afterwards. And some are like, I can't believe it. And that me too. And thank you for sharing. So it was all meant to happen, if that makes sense.
Sure. So what motivated you to start giving that talk? Because it's hard enough to like start a company, work in the company. Mm-hmm. And now you do keynotes, but what inspired that?
So we launched the company in 2013 and it's not my company. It's a 50-50 joint venture with the BMW Group and a boutique consulting company called H&Z out of Munich. But we launched the company in 2013 and a couple of years into my discovery of how I had approached the launch versus where I was successfully a couple of years later, I found myself in a networking group supported by BMW of North America. It was almost like a speed dating, but for networking, if that makes any sense. And I was one of the leaders in the podium. And I realized everyone was asking not about the work and the company and what, but me and how I, and then I just started to tell the story. And as I told the story, I got just, I mean, people were coming up to me afterwards just because I was just sharing my personal experience and being vulnerable, not to use that overused word, but to be being really vulnerable as I was telling the story. And the more I told it, the more I realized there's something here. This is a message that needs to get out. I don't want to say specifically for women, but again, women just seem to align with the message more because they have been taught after all these years to not be vulnerable in a corporate environment. And that's real. And then from there, I've been doing it for a couple of years. It just, like I said, it just wrote itself. And we launched it in New Orleans to a women's group supported by Fidelity Bank, 600 women. And it was just off the chain, tremendous. So it's taken on a life of its own.
What are some of the key points that you share in it?
There's the big piece is this. Have you ever had a situation where you've got a roadblock or a conflict or just a really hard situation and you look at your best friend or your boss or your colleagues and go, you don't understand. I don't have a choice. And the second you say those words, You go, oh, hey, victim mode, how are you? You're just swimming around in victim. Hello, blame game. Hello. And there are choices. As a matter of fact, there's five. And that's the message, that first we have to be aware that, I'm sorry, sweetie pie, you can't unknow the message that I am now telling you. You do, in fact, have a choice. And the five are awareness, that you can change it. Well, not awareness, I'm sorry, just acceptance. Literally accepting it and forgiving and moving on to change it. To shift your perspective around it, you can leave it. And the last one is to remain a victim. And have you ever tried to get a new license and gone to the DMV? Hi, victim mode, how are you? Right? So there's a lot of times we choose to remain in victim mode and be in that blame game and don't think that we have a choice when actually we have five. And so I tell my story, of course, and then we go through the 5 points. And again, it's kind of punch you in the face awareness. Topics, if that makes any sense.
Oh no, it makes sense.
Are you sure? Right, have you ever? I have to think if I've ever been in situation like that. Yes.
Yeah. No, for me, just one time. That's it. Yeah, everything.
Well, and you know, I have been divorced several times. And the first time I was married, it was a very abusive domestic situation. And there's a lot of women that are in these types of relationships, and that's a place where people tend to feel stuck.
Yes.
And feel like they don't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that those points are a big deal for that, because you can choose to continue to play the victim even when you've moved on.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people like that too, that have been in bad situations, or you know, women that got divorced 10 years ago that still bitch about their ex. Like, you can choose to stay in that mode, or you can choose to get out of it.
That's,
you know?
Right. That's right. And, you know, that's a horrible situation that you were in. And look, clearly you made some choices without maybe even knowing that there were the five choices, but you made them, Rachel, to shift your perspective, yeah. And then elevate out. And it's not easy.
Huge.
It's the question to ask yourself when you're in that position, whether you're a defined victim or not, is how's that working out for you? So you're in the blame game and you're blaming your best friend and you're blaming your ex. How's that working out? All that energy that you're putting there, they're just renting space in your brain. It's not. It's a waste of energy and it's a waste of time. And I'm not saying it's easy to elevate out. It took me a really long time. I'm sure it was challenging for you, right? And for everybody listening, I mean, it's not easy. However, it's up to you to decide, okay, I'm going to shift my perspective around this. What's going on for the other person? Why did that other person cut me off in traffic? Maybe that other person was really late for a job interview and hasn't had a job in 6 months. Maybe that person just found out that their kid was sick at school and all they cared about was you know, I can blame that guy for being a jackass, or I can say, okay, what's really good? And then you get into acceptance and then you move on and then you don't think about it anymore. And that's it. So that sounds wildly oversimplified, but truly, that's all there is to it. And I don't know about you, but right now, there's not a lot of things that can faze me. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. Sorry, insert laughter in the back end of this, right? Like, just hilarious. Not even close. I still have so much pain and so many discoveries, not mistakes. Every day. But I will never be that person that I was 6 years ago, who just was, I was swimming in victim until my fingers got pruny. I mean, you know, every single day, I'll never go back there again. So
yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
And it's a lot more comfortable for people to remain in victim mode and seek out acknowledgement from others that they have been wronged than to really turn inwards and go, okay, I had a part in this. And that, yes, was one great thing that I learned throughout my process of recovering from that particular situation, is I got a lot of therapy and really learned quickly there's two involved in any relationship. And you know, my choice to stay in it also is part, you know, it's your choice to stay in it,
mm-hmm,
or it's your choice to leave. And, you know, there's always a part that we have to play, but it's a lot easier to blame the other guy or the, mm-hmm, other gal, for sure, than to look inward, for sure.
Yep.
Well, also, if you grew up, you know, I'm big into the things that happened to you as a kid, right? And children who go through any kind of adversity, and there's all kinds of adversity from divorce to abuse to, you know, things that have impacted them. As adults, if we carried that with us, we get stuck in that mode because it's what's comfortable, because it's what we know. And to get out of that mode, even though it would be better to not be a victim, it's so unknown. You have to find a way to get comfortable with something that's uncomfortable, even though it's good for you, but it's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. This was the lesson for me. It is the fear of or desire for the consequence that drives the choice. So either you are terrified of it or you want it so badly you can't see straight. And with that, right, and to your point, and Gina, you couldn't have said it better, it's about comfort. I had a friend, this is going back 10 years ago, and she would everybody was married at the time or in relationships, and she was the only one, and she was 40, and there was blame, 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 blame. And she was on the couch, she was watching TV, and I had asked her to go out, and she said, no, I'm going to stay home. And I said, you know what? And she had on this green blanket, I'll never forget it, so I can visualize her. And I said, you are so comfortable in blaming the rest of the universe for not having a man and not doing anything about it. You're never going to, what do you think? He's going to come through the chimney like Santa Claus? Get off your ass. Let's go out. Do something about it. But she was so comfortable and blaming and talking and, woe is me. She, you know, from the south, all of a sudden from the south, I don't know, but just always complaining. And I didn't realize it. No offense, people in the south. I love you. Oh my God.
We're gonna get
I'm officially from the south. I'm as south as it gets, so I'm not offended, because again, as you say so eloquently, Tina, you do have a choice. You can choose.
Right. One. Thank you for accepting and forgiving me so quickly, Rachel. You're such a doll. But you can make fun of a New Jersey girl anytime in the show. Go for it.
Oh, we do. We do. Oh, we're like, oh, great. Such and such neighborhood in our area. Because a lot of people, as we mentioned earlier, the move to our area in Myrtle Beach because the property taxes in Jersey are just off the hook. And when you come down here, it's like getting a $10,000 raise. But there's certain neighborhoods where you're like, oh, so-and-so's looking in that neighborhood. Are they from Jersey?
Or better yet, any of the boroughs would be great too. How you doing, everybody? Good. Good to see you.
We love it. And we love having y'all down here, because then you get to make fun of our accents. And we're like, yep. Mm-hmm. But we got a beat.
I'm half Italian and I grew up in New York. And a lot of where I grew up was in Yonkers, which is like the Bronx light. And my mom's from the Bronx and the whole thing. So I had moved to Illinois for 3 years, a couple of years ago. And my first day, and they have an interesting accent in the Midwest. I had a woman look at me and do one of these up and down. She goes, where are you from? And I went, New York. And she went, oh my God, he's from New York. And they just flipped out. Talk, say some words. I was like, coffee. And they were like, oh my God. I was very entertaining. Very entertaining. I'm sorry. I diverted us, but
we do that.
No, we do that. You know, when I first moved down south from Chicago, people in the south would say, oh, you're from Jersey. I'm like, okay, seriously. I don't have a Jersey accent. It's a distinct accent, number one. I'm like, why do you think I'm from Jersey? Because I'm Italian? Italians live other places.
Yeah, no. No, you don't. No.
Well, because you ain't from around here. That's why we think you're from Jersey.
You must be from Jersey.
Meanwhile, the Midwest accent, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Bring it.
Ah, geez.
Bring me the thing. That's the whole.
Is that how I sound?
Not even close.
No, you're good. Hey, so let's pull it back in, ladies, because I want to hear about BMW and your transition over to RPC.
Because let's talk about
my next car might be a Beamer, so you know, I need to know.
I know people. Just saying.
I know. Trust me, I'm writing this down.
So let's see. So I have always been in learning and development, always in the people industry in some way, shape, or form. And in 2013, I was working in human resources. I had worked in human resources for 3 years at that point at BMW of North America. So about 1,500 people or so. And my boss at the time, head of HR, tapped me on the shoulder and he pushed a PowerPoint across the desk. And he said, you interested? And I went, what? And it was the launch of the retail performance company in the United States, and it's 10 different countries worldwide, and its main headquarters is in Munich, blah, blah, blah. He said, you'd have to build the company from scratch. You would still be attached. I personally would be still attached to BMW of North America to launch this company. And he said, it's a pretty big risk. You'd be doing training, coaching, HR services, and consulting as a business, and you would start the business from scratch. Are you interested? And I went, yeah, hell yeah, I'm interested. Wait, what? So you're just going to, what? So my now boss, Christian Fallmaier from Germany, got on the phone with me and he did an interview and he said, if you want the job, the job is yours. And I said, why is the job? Now I'm doing the terrible German accent. You'll get more letters about that. And I said, that was really fast. Why are you offering me the job? And, you know, in classic Christian slash German style, my colleague style. He was completely transparent. He goes, yeah, nobody else wants to do this job and nobody wants to launch this company. So you sound very good. And I said, okay, there's a compliment in there somewhere. So we launched the company. And that is where then I literally got a seat in the BMW headquarters in the basement and just did everything I could to start the company. And that's where the story of the keynote, yes, you do have a choice, comes out, because I quickly realized I had no clue how to start a company from scratch. I did not know anything about banking and taxes and the finances on the back end, et cetera, et cetera. So it was interesting. However, once we got situated and I hired my first person and she didn't leave me, I was like, oh my God, I hired somebody and we're creating a brand and you're staying? The next thing I know, I had 30 people and we have a very steady set of clients coming in. We are aggressively looking to support organizations outside of automotive because we are a company that comes from BMW for BMW. That was the original idea, to bring consistency and integral knowledge and outside ideas to the BMW organization. We quickly realized the knowledge that we had can support companies outside of automotive. So we've been working with companies like Verizon, Coty, Coach. We work with companies globally all over the place. So it's been a really exciting ride to get away from what I've been doing for so many years and work outside the industry. You look like you have a question, Yay. Gina.
That is the beauty of video. I have like two questions, but I'm going to go to the one. So they offer you this opportunity to go do, you know, start up a different company. Did you feel like what was your thought process? What made you, I know I should only ask this as a one question. I'm trying to phrase this
Don't
the
stack.
Right way.
Don't stack.
Yeah. I'm going to phrase it as one question. What prepared you to be able to do that?
Oh God, nothing. Oh no, I was not prepared. I am a ready, fire, aim person, which in business sometimes works to your benefit. Look at Rachel's like, me too.
I think and, we all are.
Nothing. What prepared me is my comfort level in change. I hate to use the word agile because it's such a business bingo word nowadays, but I'm just kind of naturally agile in that regard. So as the challenges were coming, I was like, okay. So just let's go, let's figure it out. I am from a classic behavioral style. I'm fast and either people or task, go, right? So I think that's what ultimately led to success. But other than that, the other thing I will say is, I'm really blessed that I had the human resources background because, quite frankly, the majority of what I do, everything that I touch is my people focus. And if I didn't have that HR and the training background, I don't know that we would be successful today because my constant priority are the people who support RPC, and they're fabulous. I mean, really.
And that's, I guess, really what the question I really wanted to ask is, did the HR background help you? Because we see organizations that, you know, a lot of their problems are stem back to leadership and culture and not being people oriented. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you see as many CEOs who, anybody in that higher level running a business has that background.
Yes. And BMW is not alone there. BMW is pretty easy to call out because they have some stereotypical leaders. And coincidentally, I'm meeting with a new pharma company in a few hours today, and I was looking through all of their exit interviews and all of their data to help them with their culture, and it's all leadership. It all comes down to leadership. And, oh, but come in and help us with our processes. No, it's not your process. It's not your lack of skill level. It's not your lack of knowledgeability. It's all treatment. It's all treatment. And so to your point, I think that's what really allowed us to elevate and survive and walk the walk. Because when we go into other organizations to help them with employee engagement, which is where our expertise lies, we do it from experience, because that's how we are elevating our own company internally. So I would, yeah, thank you for answering for me and leading me. Thank you for leading me to the answer, Gina. You're a doll.
It's interesting to look at the leadership problem, because the leaders that are doing it wrong in companies, they're never willing to admit that. Mm-hmm. They're never there. And I was listening to the book that Keith suggested, Gina, called Radical Forgiveness. It's very interesting.
I have it on my bookshelf. That's so funny.
Have you read it?
And I just started it. Matter of fact, Jacqueline Jasinowski referred it. So
she probably referred it to Keith. I just finished it. And and I the very last thing that, like the last chapter, he says, when we let go of our need to be right, then things get easier. And I it just really struck me, and I was like, good God, that's amazing. Because that, and just interpersonal relationships, and incidentally, I was just so happening to leave my ex's house dropping off stuff for my kid. And with him, that just our interpersonal relationship now, even though we're divorced and still co-parenting our child, when I let go of being right about stuff, then everything flows so much better. And I think it could be very much the same for CEOs of companies, that they're like, I'm the CEO and I am in charge. But sometimes they're not right. And that's why the culture is suffering, perhaps.
You could not have said that any more eloquently, truly. It's this. It's the noise in your head that a lot in my experience. And again, I really don't like stereotypes, but within the German culture and the German leaders with whom I have experienced, again, I don't mean to stereotype because everybody's different, but they've been taught you have to show up a certain way. And they themselves lean into their own noise, that little inner critic in their brain that says, if you are vulnerable, you will be a failure. If you're too transparent, you will be a failure. If you tell them that you don't know the answer, you are a failure. And none of that is true. The crazy thing, it's the complete opposite. And they don't have a chance. They really don't. And it's the folks that we have worked with successfully, it takes so long, gang. It really does, to just break them down. And usually we do that through coaching and really allow them to see, so where is this coming from? And why is that? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is it to be right? You know, all the questions that you ask when you're coaching. But it's their own crap. It's just your inner voice just keeping you small, which is you both, it keeps you safe, you know, then you can't fail.
And the fear of if a CEO, the boss man of everybody or the boss lady of everybody is vulnerable, they tend to, for the CEOs that I've worked for that were, had a little bit of that issue, they think that they will appear weak. And if they appear weak, then they lose control.
That's right.
And as you mentioned, it's kind of the opposite is true, is that if the rest of the company sees that they're actually human and not just a, you know, king or queen on the hill looking down on everybody, then there tends to be a lot more give and take if everybody's like in the boat together, working towards their goal together, rather than just like, oh God, here he comes, here she comes.
That's right.
Well, you know, I think CEOs are not going to like to hear this, but there are a lot of CEOs that are narcissists, and there's been studies on this. And so when you get stuck in that narcissism, you can't think outside of your own self, which is why you're listening to the noise in your head. I did some training with some CEOs through Vistage. And I was doing something on emotional intelligence, and we were talking about empathy. And one of the CEOs says, well, I don't think everybody deserves empathy. And I had to like bite my tongue as the only woman in the room up against these guys who like think they don't need to learn anything new. And I just said, well, tell me more about that. Mm-hmm. And he said, Well, you know, the people that you have to keep telling that they keep making the same mistakes over and over again. You just can't have empathy for them. And again, I just refrained. And I kind of wish I didn't refrain now in hindsight, because I won't anymore. But I'm going to say, buddy, that's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that employee making mistakes over and over again?
Mm-hmm. And you will never make that mistake again. Sometimes these things happen not for that other person, right? It's for us. So we can elevate out and say, why didn't I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's massive. And somebody like that, did you leave him? Did you terminate the relationship, almost fire the client? Because some clients you can't help.
Well, this is Vistage. I'm a speaker for Vistage. So I get, you know, Vistage is an organization of CEOs and they're members of the group. So I really don't have a say. So it's like going to a YPO or, you know, like, I mean, I haven't actively, and I'm sorry, Vistage, if you're listening, I haven't actively booked talks for next year because the experience has been a little interesting in who I've been presenting to, because they are in a holier than thou attitude. Not everybody, but a lot of them, they don't think that you can teach them something new. That's like the defense that they have up. What are you going to teach me? And right. So you're walking into that.
Mm-hmm.
You're walking into that. And that's, yeah, you're walking into their fists are up and you have to spend 3 hours with them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. The last thing you want to do is do one of these things. It's subtle. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think subconsciously I have not booked any talks, even though it's, you know, they pay me and it's lead generation, I've booked nothing for last year.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas last year at this time, I had like 20 engagements booked.
Interesting. Mm.
They need to speak to Tina and her team first, and then you can go talk to them. So they'll be open to learning.
Yeah, give me a month. Give me a month. And then we'll see.
And then you could show up.
I mean, really, though, in general, when you have these clients that lack self-awareness at such a deep level, there's only so much you can do as a partner,
right?
And expose them to and coach this and give them training and ask the big, fat, hairy questions that they've never been asked before. And they're just so broken. Sometimes you just have to let them go and say, I'm not the vendor for you. I'm not the partner for you.
Yeah. I don't think you can work within that. And you probably can speak more to that a lot of times you go into organizations. For instance, we go in from a sales training perspective. Now, we started initially, our company went in with the culture and leadership mindset,
mm-hmm.
but we found it a hard sell. So we backdoored it with sales training because everybody wants to generate revenue. But then you get in and you see that the sales process and then the problems are all linked back to leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to sort of backdoor it and then see how interested and vulnerable they are willing to be to fix the bigger problems.
Mm-hmm. Which can be a little scary in sales, right? Because when you sell let's just get in. Let's get in and see what we can do. And then again, swim around and whatnot. And we've done that. We've done that successfully. Knock right on wood before. But it's a little bit scary to then organically let the people for whom you are working with rise up and say, hey, look, this is actually working for us. This, Yeah. It's the right thing to do, though. It's ideal. And you can't, you know, from a sales perspective, you can't take the monkey from their circus. And I did that a lot as a vendor. And I've been a vendor a couple of times in my career. And just take it on and wear it around and try to fix their problems and whatnot. And I was fighting a fight. Nobody was fighting but me. My colleagues and my team were like, give them the monkey back. Just, it's okay. It's okay. It's a cute monkey, but give it back. You're right. Okay, we'll give it back. So,
I just had such a visual.
Yeah, I don't really know where I was going to go with that.
That's a great spin with the circus and the monkeys quote, because we, Gina and I, bring that one up all the time. We have to say, that's not your monkeys. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let that one go.
I'm going to send you both the barrel of monkeys to put on your desks.
Hey Warners, you have probably heard me talk on several occasions about how much I love wearing red lipstick. Lipstick is just one of those things that makes me feel good about how I look, and sometimes a little extra enhancement to my lips from Dermavogue doesn't hurt either. I've known Dr. Jim Turek of Dermavogue for years. He is not only
my doctor who keeps my body healthy. He and his Dermavogue team keep my face looking healthy and maybe a little younger, maybe. I mean, I love it when people say, something looks different about your face, but they can't really tell because that's really what you want. You want to go to a place that makes your face look as good and it makes people wonder what happened. So what's really cool about Dermavogue being our premier sponsor of this show is the fact that I'm a client, and I was a client before they became a partner of the show. So we're excited about that. Dermavogue has been offering the greater Myrtle Beach area the best in cosmetic and aesthetic dermatology since 2003. Opened by Dr. James Turek, Dermavogue combines expert medical knowledge with cutting-edge technology, bringing you the most effective, flawless solutions to any skincare or cosmetic need. Their patients enjoy only the absolute best in laser technology, including photodynamic laser therapy, hydrofacials, and V-beam laser treatments, as well as the latest fillers such as Botox, skin peels, facials, and more. At Dermavogue, they engage you in the process of total body health to ensure your satisfaction with their comprehensive selection of the most up-to-date, non-invasive cosmetic, dermatology, and spa treatments. It's human nature to want to look your best, right? Let Dermavogue help you get there. Schedule your consultation today by calling 843-357-2444 or visit dermavogue.com and tell them that the women your mother warned you about sent you. You can also find them on our website. Go check it out.
You know, when you talk about these people, like the client that you may have to potentially fire because they're just not willing to learn, it all really boils down to fear, don't you think? Like fear of what they might face if they face it. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, the sad fact of the matter is, if they don't face that, then they're not going to grow in the way that they want, whether it be revenue or culture or what have you. But it's fear, like fear of like,
Yep.
What if she's right?
It's funny, Rachel, when you said that, there's actually an American leader that we are working with now who I am. There's no I in team, but there's certainly an I in his name. I've never heard the word I from a big CEO always out there speaking so much in my entire life. And we've done a lot of work with this guy, and he is terrified. Now, honestly, I don't even care of what you're afraid. It's your fear. You know, yes, of course, we need to figure that out. But the fear of just saying, I don't know, what do you think, is debilitating him. And I don't see him in this place much longer because the organization is just not going to stand for it. And I couldn't agree with you more. The fear outweighs the ability to be vulnerable. And it's just mind-boggling to me. And it's really sad. It's really sad because these guys, yes, have been promoted to these positions. And I say guys, I shouldn't say that. Men and women have been promoted to these positions of power. And they don't see how it's like being a parent. Every step they take, every word they utter, every action that they mimic, people are mimicking that. They're watching that. They're salivating for direction and support. And they don't know that they're really shifting the whole culture with their actions. But you're right. It's fear-based, 100%, 100%.
You know, you were talking about vulnerability, and women, I think, were more likely to be vulnerable and show our vulnerability. We know that. But you mentioned earlier at the top of this show that we've also been conditioned to not show it at work. So to be a really good leader, you need vulnerability. Women have a better chance of being vulnerable. So how do we get more women in those top leadership roles based on that?
Mm-hmm. I still think there's a lot of bias. I think there's affinity bias. I think there's unconscious bias. There's beauty, all the biases, you name it, it's in there. And I think what needs to shift is just, we shouldn't be hiring women to hit a quota. And that there's still that. There's still diversity. I'm sorry, inclusion. We don't use the word diversity anymore. We use the word inclusion. And it's a big deal. And I believe in it. Excuse me, and I support it. And I think it needs to be a mind shift. It needs to be a perspective shift at the hiring level. And maybe we need to do what they did in the 70s with the orchestras somehow. Stop me if you know this, but in the 1970s, I think 5% of the orchestras in the world had women, were made up of women, 5%. And they realized that in the 70s, that there was just a bias, that there was a thought that men were better than women when it came to playing the instruments and just having talent. So they started to do blind auditions, and they would put up these big tarps and then have people come in and actually audition. It failed at first because the ground in which the candidates would walk up to play was made of wood, and they could hear that clippity, 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 clippity of the women. So it was still biased. But once they got all that straightened out, now I think about 30% of all orchestras are made up of women. So, and that's, we need to take conscious action to remove the bias during the interview process. Number one, in some industries, we also need to engage women to become more interested. In the world of BMW, and I'll speak for North America only, a big reason that there's not enough women is that there weren't enough women in the industry to begin with, so there weren't enough to promote up. That is shifting dramatically, so we're getting there. It's just slow. So technicians, you know, certain industries just aren't as female populated. But honestly, I think it's awareness, and I think it's conscious action within the culture to be open and aware of we all are biased. We all have unconscious bias, and be aware of it and then shift our perspective and talk about it openly, not to sit there and listen. I still work in an old boys network. I really do. And I hear it and I see it, and you need to call it out. I, as a woman, will look at my colleagues and just go, "You're pissing me off right now. Knock it off," or whatever it is, right? Just say the words and be the guy. Always be the guy. You can't not say something. I hate to sound so contrite, but you have to speak up. You have to say something. You have to be a change agent. On a different level, I'm going to throw my own company under the bus for a second. 6 years ago, when RPC built its first website, my first hire in the US was a young African-American woman. I got the website pictures, and every single image was a white, blue-eyed, blonde-haired human being. And so I got it and I lost my mind. And I said, let me ask you a question. I have one employee. How does she fit into this company? How do you want her to culturally lean into our organization and love it and be engaged and want to stay here when she can't relate to one human being? Quite frankly, neither can I, but how can you? And they had no clue. They had, because nobody had called them out before and said, this is not reflective. They didn't know that they were biased. And now our pictures look like NATO, for Christ's sake. I mean, it just every... you know, race, but it takes somebody to just, again, I hate to keep saying vulnerable, but just put yourself out there and take the risk for being the guy who always says something. We just have to keep doing it.
Well, you know, talking about mirroring, we could be mirroring men a little bit more on the positive side of things that they do to get what they want.
I had a coach one of the things that happened when I first started the retail performance company, I just started to do, and I wanted to staff up, and I proposed, I think, a company of 14 people. And I was told, no, we needed to sell business first before we were able to ramp up with personnel. And I understand that. And my coach, who was a huge feminist, by the way, and she said, you know, if typically a man wouldn't have done the work until he got what he wanted, why didn't you stand up and go get what you wanted? And I went, son of a, I don't have an answer. I don't know. Because honestly, it made the launch and the ramp up so much harder to do it by if we had spent money early on for a couple of key personnel, talented humans, we would have been, I still to this day feel like we would have been in a different position. But the point is, I never even thought to fight for it. Never even thought about it. And she said, that's classic female. Whereas a man would have immediately just, this is what I want. And so to your point, Gina, that's an amazing idea. What characteristics are we not gravitating towards as women that men naturally wouldn't even think about? This is how I show up all the time, 24/7, boom. And why aren't we? So really, that's your next show. Right there.
Yeah, our next show also can go off of yesterday. I was at an event with a bunch of realtors from one of the top big, you know, name brand real estate companies, and they had a panel of top producers. There were six people on the panel, multi-million dollar producers, and one was a woman. One. and it was pissing me off. And Gina, I was texting Gina. I'm like,
she's messaging me.
There's only look at this picture.
Look at this picture.
There's only one woman, and her production is so much lower than all the men. And afterwards, I found out she's like 20 something. This girl, she is she's got like multi-million-dollar transactions going on. But the rest of the guys up there had these big teams, so they had like $600 million worth of volume. But that was their entire team, and she just started her team, and she did 112 transactions herself last year. Mm-hmm. So what was really great about it, because I was just working myself up, being pissed and looking up articles and sending them to Gina, she actually, when she had her opportunity to speak about her passion projects, she said her passion project is to get more women up here next to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I put my arms up. I was like, yes, because I was looking around the room at the folks in the audience, the real estate agents in the audience that were there. And it was like literally 50-50 women to men, mm-hmm, who were there to learn. And they're all looking at one chick. Mm-hmm. And so I was super glad she said that, mm-hmm, because it was true.
I'll follow her into battle.
She was awesome. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I bet now she will form that team. She probably had people lined up to be able to
work with
them.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
For sure.
Good.
So.
Super.
To your point, you have to be a change agent. Speaking of passion projects, because Rachel said passion, I found something on your LinkedIn profile, Tina, your volunteer work.
Mm-hmm.
The Durga Tree Mission?
Durga Tree has been around for, it's really not a sexy topic, and it's hard to sell what it is. It's an anti-trafficking organization. What's a little unique about it is it raises money for different components to stop slavery. It's education, rescue, which I get the goosebumps when I think about it, because to actually have people helicopter in and rescue these women costs so much money, and legal fees. Because legally, just to get this, and I say women, but really it's children and boys and girls. It's just so many different people. And, human slavery, don't quote me, I think is it number two now? So there's drugs, there's arms, and there's humans. And it used to be third. Yeah. I think it might be one now. So
I thought it was closer to one. It's either one or two.
It's just unbelievable. And, so it's easy to want to support them. And Durga was Beth Tiger is the founder, and she's unbelievable. And she named the company Durga after the goddess Durga, who has all of the arms with the different tools. And so, and tree, because trees have roots. So that's where the name came. It's a really special organization. And again, it's hard. The hardest part is nobody wants to talk about it.
Just the word slavery, I mean, in the South, like the word slavery just makes everybody kind of turn their, don't look at their watch, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
because it's such an uncomfortable subject, and just the human trafficking. And actually, this area of Myrtle Beach is one of the top human trafficking hotbeds, because it's such a transitory area that it's, I guess I use the word easy for people to get away with it. It's just crazy to imagine that it's still, you know, in the eyes of the South, in the eyes of, you know, America, slavery is something that we ended a long time ago.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's what everybody prefer to believe.
Exactly. Well, no, it's not my problem. It doesn't happen. The person who's doing your nails, it could be the clothing that you buy. It could be, and you know, the young person who is living in China right now, who is forced to do this, whatever. The people who are selling their children just so they can feed their other children. I mean, it's so prevalent. And again, it's just the least sexy topic to talk about, which is why people go like this. I remember they were looking for charities in my kid's school. This is years ago. And I said, hey, I have this idea. And the woman with whom I was speaking was like this. And I went, you know what, just, you'll call.
How about puppies instead?
Exactly. Okay. How about the brownies?
Puppies is good. Puppies is good.
Oh my God. You know, and it's just, it's really challenging to talk about. So, but my, there are so many different organizations from which Durga supports as well. These women who are creating their own jewelry line. So they're being rescued. They're being educated, they live together, and then they're taught how to blacksmith, they're taught how to, or silversmith, I should say, and they create these beautiful pieces of jewelry. So now they have, they're educated, they take care of themselves, and now they're contributing back to society. It's just amazing what it can do. So yeah, that's a passion project, I would say. Yeah, exactly.
could you introduce us to her?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, I'm writing it down right now.
That would be awesome.
She'd be a great guest for us to talk about that.
Yep. She, this is not her first day speaking to. She is tremendous and she's brilliant and she is so passionate. It's ridiculous. So she would be, I'll make that happen as soon as we're done.
So we'll talk about it. If people don't want to talk about it, we'll talk about
okay.
it.
Okay. Yay.
They've been warned.
Put it out there.
Yep. Let's put it out there. And then let's do that and then bring you to our closing questions. How do you define sexy?
Wow. I did not see that question coming at all.
Especially shifting gears from what we were just talking about. Yeah.
You know, the first word that came to my mind is confident, because I feel the most sexy to me means attractive, but it also just means being so comfortable in your own skin that it doesn't matter if you're 2 pounds overweight or if you're wearing flat shoes instead of heels, which I would never do. I think that's important.
Amen.
Yeah, I don't understand them. Why do they exist? Anyway, but to me, being just authentic in your own skin and just, which means confidence. So to me, yeah, that's that. And I can look at somebody in any case and be like, yeah, you are sexy just because you walk your walk and you talk your talk. Ooh, I like that question. What else you got?
How would you describe a woman your mother warned you about?
The show or you two?
A woman your mother warned you about.
Okay.
We're not going to lead you because we've had all kinds of answers to this.
So my mom can smell, used to be able to smell the friends, my girlfriends, who were never my girlfriends. Like they would come over and she would be like, nope, watch out for that. And she, I don't know how she knew, but she knew. So I actually have an ex-friend in mind that my mother warned me about. And she was so unbelievably two-faced. And she was just, it comes down to judgment and blowing out somebody's candles to make yours shine brighter. That's a woman with whom I just don't understand. There's so few of us. We need to look at each other and say, like Jacqueline Jasinowski, who was already on your show, in theory, she and I could be competitors. No way. She is fantastic and has so much fun. I will elevate her, and I know, and she'll do the same thing for me. I don't comprehend when there's a woman who will blow out my candles to make her shine brighter. That to me is the epitome of a woman for whom my mother
would. Okay, well, what about us? Because we're women your mother warned you about. So how is...
I took that in a different direction is what you're saying. Correct.
It's been done before, though.
No, it has been. And it's interesting because, you know, when we decided to name this podcast, you know, that was the challenge of, do we stick to this kind of quirky name? And there have been people that have like, nah, I don't want to be on your show. Like, they didn't say why,
mm-hmm.
but we knew why.
Candle blowers. The first, okay. So from that perspective, this was easy, right? Because you two in particular, and Gina, I talked to you on the phone, you were both filled with light. And I don't mean to sound like warm and fuzzy and ooh, you know, patchouli oil smelling and all that good stuff. But this it's the opposite of the wrong direction that I went 10 seconds ago. This is about uplifting women around us to help them get to the next level and to perhaps let them see what they themselves are not seeing in themselves within their, because when we connected right away, Gina, it was, you know,
it was love. It was love at first sight.
There was no competition. There was no this, there was no, what can I get out of Tina? It was just, we're going to make this work. We're going to make this work for each other. I'm going to help you. You're going to help me. I'm going to support you. You're going to support me just because. And that to me is the epitome of what you two are about and what this is about, for sure. Don't ever stop.
What's interesting is that woman that I was speaking about at the that I saw yesterday at the realtor event, she pointed that out. She said there's the bro mentality and the way that men interact, and they're like, yeah, bro, and fist bump. And men are, she said, men are like that with each other. Women in general, there's a lot of them out there that will look at a woman who's successful and not support that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is what Gina and I are the opposite of, because we know that when you see a woman kicking ass, help her kick some more ass.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Exactly.
And so tell everybody how much ass she's kicking, because that supports her. And, you know, if we all can rise higher together rather than tearing one another down. And women are pretty good at that. They're very sadly.
Good. Mm-hmm. That was the 11th grade class, like after study hall, how to tear each other down. 101. Hey, that's great. It's just, there's no space for it. I think that's well said. Well Awful. Said, Rachel.
So what's the best advice you've ever been given?
Best advice for me personally is to slow down. So take a breath. Really think that through. I rarely take it.
Yeah, I was about to say, how's that going for you?
Yeah. Use my question against me, right? It hasn't worked out. It has been without question, because the times, and the second piece of advice is trust your gut. My body speaks to me physically. I don't know why I don't listen to it 24/7, but it has never failed me. Just trust mm-hmm. your inner self. You know, when you're hiring somebody, when you're react, slow down and just trust. Really.
Do you hear that, Warners? That's something, especially as women, that we have to really get better at. I know I was once in a performance review told by a boss that I made too many decisions based on my gut. And it shut me down for years mm-hmm. to not do that anymore mm-hmm. until I realized, wait a second, my gut's always right.
Right. Mm-hmm. What do you know, Mr. Man?
Exactly.
Yeah, your gut is always right.
These questions are fabulous.
One last one. We should already get these in. What is your advice for other women? What advice would you give our Warners?
Say what you feel. Just say it. When you are in a meeting, in a conversation, just be transparent. It never failed. It has for me personally, when I allow myself to be vulnerable and just be transparent, people follow me into battle when I do that. I have found that people, they honor me and my decision more, or our decisions more. It works every single time. And I'm not saying that to use as a technique or a ploy. Just authentically be you and just let it be free. The truth will set you free. Again, I feel like this has been an hour of contrite Tina statements that we've heard before, but this is especially through my experience of launching RPC and going through the discoveries and the failures and the mistakes. The more transparent I have been, the more successful I have become. And that would be my advice. I love these questions, Rachel. These are fantastic.
I wish I had another one. Gina, you got one?
No, that those are our end of the, we've kind of gravitated to this or evolved to this kind of last few questions that we call the signature questions of the show. So
awesome. Well, thank you.
I mean, we'll come up with more, I mean, for next time.
No, now I'm exhausted. I think that your guest, this is it. This is all, I'm depleted. This is great.
Well, I don't think you've been contrite at all. I think you've added a lot of value and a lot of great things for our listeners to listen to. And we know how busy you are. So thank you for taking time to hang out with us women your mother warned you about.
Thank you both. It's been an honor. I had a ball.
And if people want to know more about you or RPC, what are the best ways to do that?
So our website is rpcamerica.com. And I can always be reached via email at tina.clements@rpc-partners.com. The longest email address on the planet.
No, the longest email on the planet is women@womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
You win. Okay, yeah. Throw a dash in there. Little, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you once again to Tina, and thank you to all of our Warners for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. And hey, just don't forget about our amazing sponsor, DermaVogue, who keeps Rachel and I looking very pretty. At least we think so. Hey, if you want to get a hold of me or find out more about me and Pivotum Results or Carolina Improv, you can go to GinaTremarco.com and everything you want to know is there. And for Rachel?
Connect with me, Rachel Pitts, all over social media as Rachel on Real Estate. And you can find all of our social media links and free downloads on our website at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
Oh, and one last thought. If you haven't reviewed our show yet, we would love you and we'll read the review on air. You can review us on iTunes, leave us a review and rating, or anywhere that you listen to podcasts. We do prefer iTunes because that's the mothership. And remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye, Warners.
Bye, Warners.
Bye, Tina.
Bye.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.